your eyes for the train to start. You were supposed to meet at 11 this morning, but due to other meetings that were taking place that also demanded my attention and the attention of other members of the committee, the meeting was moved to 2 o'clock. So apologies for that. I'm also mindful that the National Assembly is sitting at the moment, and that there's also very important business on the agenda of the Assembly. And if a division is called for, that demand the presence of members in a sitting of the National Assembly, then we will suspend the proceedings of the committee to allow members to go and vote, and then upon the result in the House, we will return so that we can complete the work in front of us. I received an apology from one of the members, who is an alternate on the committee, is Honorable Maseko. She is unable to attend this meeting because she's currently in Zambia, attending the funeral of a Zambian president. That's related to a womb, it's related to a. Are there any other apologies, Sakona, that you received? No further apologies. We have the agenda in front of us. Is there a proposal for the adoption of the agenda? Is there no other item that must be added? Is there a proposal? Honorable Ngobo, seconded by the Honorable Nahule. We now come to the minutes of the 6th of November. A meeting that took place last week. Page 1, we'll first check for correctness. Page 2, are there any corrections? I can see the question mark on your forehead on the book of mine. Page 3, yes.
Thanks. On page 3, and legal number 5, legal opinion presented, adjusting that. The second sentence, the published second sentence. Sentence one is too long. It should be patched to a full stop. Advocate and Manara Parliament legal advisor took the committee through the opinion he prepared for the committee chairperson. But if you read on the question of whether the president of the council has achieved benefit from the upgrade made at this private Miranda residence, I think it should have either responding to it, but I just think that it's supposed to be hard enough, but it looks like one long sentence too.
Okay.
I don't know if you want it to be correct, but you can just say that it can be substituted and correct.
You say that, and we must include Advocate Endonara, senior parliamentary legal advisor. Senior parliamentary legal advisor took the committee through the opinion in prepared for the committee on the request by the chairperson, illegal advice, dealt with a question on whether the president of the republic, not of the country, of the republic has unduly benefited from the upgrades made at his private and Kandahar residence. Is that in order? Is there any other correction on page 3? Page 3, any other corrections? And on page 4, there's no further corrections. And I guess I'm going to move the adoption of these minutes. Honorable Kubai, seconded by the Honorable Wacheka. Are there any matters arising out of these minutes? Honorable Wacheka?
Chairperson, allow me just to make an observation. Allow me just to make an observation that there were media reports that the committee to call
To add to what Honorable Jahai said about opposition, the chairperson informed us that Honorable Mulder has sent the opposition to show that he is still a member of the community. So he was not here.
May I also just indicate in the interim that there was a request from the office of the Honorable Mulder to disclose. I was informed of it later this evening. A request from the office to the Office of the Legal Advice to ask for a copy of the legal opinion. But unfortunately, at that moment, I could not attend to it because we were still busy with legal counsel dealing with, amongst other, that legal opinion that was submitted to us. I subsequently informed the Advocate Bernard that he searched Dr. Mulder, he's still a member of the committee, whether he's here or not, that he should furnish him with a legal opinion. And I think that it's finding its way to the Honorable Mulder so that he can also then apply his advice. Are there any other members arising? Thank you. Any other members arising? No problem. And now, an external draft report that will be tabled, or that is being tabled here, and subject to what the committee pronounces upon, we will then decide on its status. This is version 4 of the report. So any reference to other reports must say that a lot of work has gone into subsequent versions of the report. I want to go through the pages one by one so the members can indicate if there's issues of clarity or corrections that they wish to make, because after this process and the committee adopts the report and becomes the report of the committee, it will then be sent to the National Assembly, the National Assembly table, for publishing in the ATC. So members must pay careful attention and draw my attention if there is anything untoward in the report. Please have you considered the report of the President, the reports and correspondence presented before it on the security of the presidents of the President. The committee wishes to report as follows. And get first into the introduction. And my apologies for those who are going to hear the same things from the last meeting. But this is how Parliament conducts its business. We start with the introduction. The Ad Hoc Committee to consider the report by the President regarding the security upgrades at the Nkanda Prime Residence of the President was established through a resolution of the National Assembly on 19 August 2014. The Assembly resolution of 19 August 2014 reads as follows. The Chief of the Majority Party moved to the House. Notes that the report by the President of the Republic of South Africa to the Speaker regarding security upgrades of the Nkanda Prime Residence of the President was tabled on 14 August 2014. Then it refers to the ATC number and the date in which this report appeared, and goes on then to say the Ad Hoc Committee is being established or establishes an Ad Hoc Committee to consider the report by the President, make recommendations where applicable, exercise those powers set out in the Rule 138 of the Rules of the National Assembly that are necessary to carry out this task. Consists of 11 members as follows: African National Congress 6, Democratic Alliance 2, Economic Freedom Fighters 1, and other parties 2. And report to the House no later than 24 October 2014. On 12 September 2014, the following correspondence from the President was also referred to the Ad Hoc Committee by the Speaker, and we refer to the relevant ATC again. A letter dated 12 August 2014 from the Public Protector to the President of the Republic regarding the report they submitted to the National Assembly in relation to the security upgrades at the Nkanda residence. A letter dated 11 September 2014 from the President to the Republic of the Republic to the Public Protector in response to the letter dated 21st August 2014. I want to draw the attention to the members to this specific part here, that there is another letter that the Public Protector wrote, and that is being omitted from here. responding to the message of the president. Just for our purposes, that letter, I think about the interest for each of them, needs to be reflected in our records as well. Also on 12 September 2014, the final report of Special Investigating Unit, the SIU, to the President of the Republic regarding the speech project involving the security operation of the private residence of the President situated in Kanda KwaZulu-Natal was referred to the Error Committee, and the Royal ATC is also indicated. Following this, a multi-party chief was forum. At a multi-party chief was forum, the political party signature, public protector's report, the report of the Special Investigating Unit, established in terms of Proclamation R-59 of 2013 and the submission of the President thereto, and all other relevant and correspondence would be considered. The following reports and correspondence therefore serve as source documents for consideration of the report by the President by the Committee. The Interministerial Security Cluster Task Team Report, also referred to as the Interministerial Security Cluster Task Team Report. The report of the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence on the Interministerial Report. The Public Protector's Report entitled Secure in Comfort. And the Special Investigating Unit's final report. We then reflect on the membership of the committee, all the different political parties. And importantly, we also captured in the resolution highlights on the 23rd of October 2014. The Assembly by resolution extended the deadline for the Ad hoc Committee report 14 November 2014. Committee deliberations. In other committee deliberations, there is a footnote that simply indicates, because the names of these members were here, in under committee deliberations, the Congress of the People does not have five representatives of the committee. Cope and other small parties are as a collective elected. Cope and the other small parties as a collective elected the Honourable Mr. N. King of the IFP and the Honourable Dr. C. D. Mulder as a class to represent them in the Arrow Committee. On the 29th of August 2014, the committee convened to elect chairperson in terms of the rules of the National Assembly. However, at this meeting, due to differences of opinion on what constituted the committee's terms of reference, the chairperson was not elected. The opposition parties were of the opinion that the resolution establishing the Ad hoc Committee should be amended to reflect that the committee was considered and report on the report of the public protector. After consultation amongst all the different parties, at a special meeting of the Multi-Party Chief of Forum of the National Assembly, the committee reconvened on 9 October 2014 and elected the Honourable Mr. C. T. Frolic as its chairperson. The committee convened on the following dates to consider the President's report and various reports which serve before its actual documents. And the dates are indicated as follows: 18 September, 14 December 2014, 25 September, 26 September, 9 October, 30 October, 6 November, and then the 11th of November. At the meeting of the 21st of September 2014, the members representing Congress of the People, although not members of the committee, highlighted the party's objections to the constitutionality of the committee. All other parties disagreed with the interpretation of the co-MPs and agreed that the committee was to be constitutional. The representatives of Hope then left the meeting stating that the party followed the proceedings of the committee but did not participate in its work. In the subsequent meeting of 26 September 2014, members of the committee could not reach agreement on the methodology to follow in performing its mandate task. The key points of deliberation were whether, one, the findings, recommendations, and remedial actions in the report of the public protector were binding and enforceable on other organs of sex, and any person or persons to be invited to present the reports before the committee or to provide oral evidence. In its deliberations, the issues of contention between members of the majority party and the opposition parties were as follows. The opposition parties held the following position. The report of the public protector was superior to all other reports. public protector does not make recommendations. Her report is drawn up with stated remedial actions. The proposed remedial actions stated in the public protector's report secure comfort for binding and enforceable. The committee has to invite persons and parties mentioned in the report of the public protector, the interministerial task in security cluster and special investigating unit to appear before the committee as allowed by Rule 138 of the National Assembly Rules. And the committee has to seek a legal opinion from senior legal counsel on the status of the public protector report and whether or not its proposed remedial actions were binding and enforceable on the organs of state. The majority party held the following position. The committee's deliberations should remain focused on the report of the president. All the reports have to be treated in an equal manner to avoid casting aspersions on any of the government agencies or structures that dealt with the matter at hand. The committee has considered the following source documents to get a proper understanding of the issues raised: right, the Interministerial Security Cluster Tracking Report, the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence Report, the Public Protector's Report, and the Special Investigating Unit Report. The Public Protector makes recommendations and may state remedial actions. The proposed remedial actions stated in the Public Protector's Report were not binding and enforceable on other organs of state. The committee to first consider the report by the President and other reports prior to deciding whether or not to call witnesses. The majority party further listed the 10 steps as contained in Cabinet Memorandum of 2003 as guiding the methodology it would follow. The committee could not reach consensus at this meeting on the issue of the methodology to be followed. Members of the opposition parties withdrew their participation from the committee and walked out of the meeting. Assembly Rule 133 states that paragraph 1, a majority of the members of the committee constitutes a quorum subject to subrule 2. 2, a committee may proceed with business irrespective of the number of members present, but may decide a question only if a quorum is present. When a committee has to decide a question and a quorum is not present, the members presiding may either suspend business until a quorum is present or adjourn the meeting. When the committee again met on 30 September 2014, it was confirmed in terms of the relevant rules that members present performed a quorum. The committee therefore proceeded with its mandated oversight responsibilities to consider the president's report and the stock documents. The committee adopted the methodology as contained under bullets A to G in the above report. In this meeting, the technical staff supporting the committee presented the commonalities and differences in the findings and recommendations of the source documents as served before the committee. In focusing on this issue, the committee also considered the constitutional role of the president, the executive, accounting officers, and officials of the respective departments. In concluding the meeting of 30 September 2014, the committee once more invited the opposition parties to return and participate in the ongoing proceedings towards finalizing the work of the committee. Given the nature of the committee's oversight function and considering the president's report, the committee decided that it was not necessary to call witnesses. Make a note of it and check, please. The committee noted that when the public protector submitted her report to the National Assembly in 2004, the public protector's special report to Parliament 28 May 2004, the National Assembly established an ad hoc committee to deal with the matters. The committee noted that in processing its work, the ad hoc committee of 2004 did not call witnesses to give evidence, but instead considered the contents of the report before it. The committee therefore applied the principle of precedence, stare decisis, and focused on the content of the investigative reports serves as source documents for it, rather than initiating its own in-depth investigation into the matter. The committee concluded this meeting by agreeing that the draft committee report should be prepared for consideration at the next meeting. On 9 October 2014, the committee met to consider its draft report. After deliberations, the committee noted that additional time was required to properly prepare the final report for the committee's consideration. The committee again expressed disappointment at the withdrawal of the opposition members from the deliberations of the Arrow Committee. The committee repeated its call for members of the opposition serving the committee to return to the committee to complete the task in line with the House resolution. Those are the first 8 pages. Are there any specific points that you want to highlight on your members? Any correction? Members after that, because it is opposition party members, so it should be parties. Any other corrections? Then we get into the point 3 on page 8, observations. During its deliberations, the Arrow Committee made the following observations and appears under different names. The status of the public protector's report, the legal actions in the High Court yesterday judgment regarding the public protector as an ombudsman. 3.1. The committee noted that the outcome in the High Court of South Africa in the matter between the Democratic Alliance, DA, and the South African Broadcasting Corporation, SABC, case number 12490, sub 2014, was of relevance to the matter that it was mandated to consider. This judgment stressed the importance of the public protector, the office of the public protector, as one of six institutions established by the Constitution to strengthen democracy through the independence, impartiality, and the exercise of the powers of free favor of prejudice. The committee noted, in addition, the judgment provided clarity with regards to the findings and remedial actions of the office of the public protector, as it stated that the powers, and I quote, all the functions of the public protector are not adjudicated to this court. And that, open quote, the finding of the public protector is not binding on persons and organs of the state, close quote. And that is cross-referenced also in terms of section 182.1 of the Constitution. 3.4, the committee observed that the above-mentioned judgment further stated that the power to take remedial action as described in section 182, Section 1 of the Constitution means, and I quote, is no more than the public protector may take, that the public protector may take steps to address improper or prejudicial conduct. But that is not to say that the fines of the public protector are binding and enforceable, or that the institution is effective without such powers, close quote, and that is a quotation of the judgment. 3.5, the committee further noted that the investigative reports produced by the Interministerial Task Force, Joint Standing for the Intelligence, and especially in the investigating units, all contain findings and recommendations, but that specifically the latter legislative could initiate further legal action to ensure redress and remedial action. Referred to in the Chapter Memorandum of 2003. committee observed that the cabinet memorandum of 2003 has as its main consideration the safety of the president, and that it does not place any limit on the amount to spend in setting up credits for security purposes. And cross-reference that for the Interministerial Security Cluster Drafting Report, December 23rd. 3.8, the regulatory framework guides the actual processes along which officials operationalize the projects, and consists of both legislation and practice notes from the National Treasury on the one hand, as well as supply chain management policies of the DPW Works on the Department of Public Works on the other hand. 3.9, the legislation that gives effect to Section 216, paragraph 1 of the Constitution, is the Public Finance Management Act, which states that national legislation is required to establish, and I quote, a national treasury and describe measures to ensure both transparency and expenditure control in each sphere of government by introducing a generally recognized accounting practices, uniform expenditure classifications, and uniform treasury norms and standards. And that's a quotation out of the DFMA. Division of responsibility. The committee noted that Section 96, paragraph 1, prescribes that, and I quote, members of the cabinet and deputy ministers must act in accordance with the code of ethics prescribed by national legislation. 3.11, Section 96, paragraph 2C of the Constitution lays out the conduct that of the that members of cabinet and deputy ministers may not use their position or any information trusted to them to reach themselves or improperly to any person. 3.12, the PMA in giving effect to what the Constitution states it should do, ensures that an important division of responsibility between the political head, that is the president, deputy president, cabinet minister, or provincial member of the executive, on the one hand, and the administrative head of the department, that is the director general, or head of department of a national or provincial department, exists. The political head, referred to as the executive authority, held the responsibility for matters of policy, while the administrative head, referred to as the accounting officer, held the responsibility to implement the department's budget and human resources to translate policy into concrete outcomes. The executive authority remains accountable to Parliament for achieving policy matters and outcomes, while the accounting officer is accountable for the manner in which he or she utilized the budget and human resources to reach those outcomes. The committee observes that an important aspect of the TFMA was the establishment and maintenance in each department of government of an effective and transparent financial accountability system. 3.16, in the matter before the committee, the report before it contained evidence that the roster system for which service providers were contracted, the Special Adjudicating Committee, the Regional Adjudicating Committee, and the supply chain management policies were in fact in place and were supposed to be applied in a uniform and transparent manner, and cross-reference that also with the relevant documents where that is sourced from. Systems of financial control are Constitution prescribed. 3.17. The committee observed one of the committee assistants to check with the people dealing with the song. So we start with a meeting. But we'll continue. Perdón. Systems of financial control. Over your interpretation of the rule members. 3.17, the committee observed that the TFMA is appropriate effect to Section 216 of the Constitution and it places on accounting officers and those who have accounting officers' responsibilities in terms of Section 38 to 44 of the TFMA to not only establish but to maintain systems of financial accountability. And accounting officers are therefore responsible for the following. A. The operation of basic financial systems, internal controls in all the departments and the entities that fall under their control. to ensure that budgets are not overspent, to report on the monthly and annual basis, to publish annual reports in a prescribed manner, which should include performance reports 3.18. The committee observed that chapter 10 of the PSMA states clearly that accounting officers face disciplinary sanctions, including dismissals, where they do not adhere to the prescripts of the PSMA. 3.9, the committee observed that in a report, the public protector states that there were instances where the executive authorities claimed to close the areas of responsibility of accounting officers and the administration. It's cross-reference to the public protector's report, page 61. Committee also observed that residences or families that had to be resettled for security purposes were constructed on land that belongs to the Nkonyama Trust. The president occupied the land was a figure issued by the local Mkhosi terms permission to occupy. This statement is derived from the president's report to the Speaker of the National Assembly on 14 August and the public protector's report on pages 45 and 46. 3.21, the committee observed with concern that the investigating team of the SIU reported that in spite of the project to secure it, the private residence of the president remained insecure. SIU report, page 244. We then reflect in terms of the area where these upgrades took place, security upgrades took place, and also where construction took place. The rural character of Kanda affected the provision of security, and all this information is derived from the President's report to the Speaker of the National Assembly, and also the different security assessments as reported, and contained the report of the JCI and the security cluster ministers. 3.22, the unique rural conditions of the area and the ensuring the security of the president. 3.23, in improving security, government must make the necessary physical modification to the particular physical and socio-economic circumstances within which the president's private residence is situated. 3.24, the president is the commanding chief of the armed forces and he is dependent. Must be provided with housing by the South African National Defence Force, protection by the South African Police Services, supported by the SANDF, and transport by the South African Police Services and the SANDF. The material conditions at the Kanda that influence security upgrades. 3.25. The President's private residence is geographically located in a deep rural area that is characterized by a low level of infrastructural development, the statistics showing that area ranging the top 5 poorest areas in the province of KwaZulu-Natal. 3.26. Those are low quality, which influences security. Due to the need for access roads that enable staff who are responsible for the president's health, protection, and transport to quickly reach and, in case of emergency, evacuate the president and his dependents. 3.27. The drainage steep and mountains, which make any form of transport difficult, especially in bad weather. Due to the situation of Eskom pilots even in transported by air, and that has also proven to be dangerous. The outdoor care facilities in Kanda are too far from the president's residence. 3.29, there is a general lack of groundwater and electricity supply and communication infrastructure that negatively influences the socio-economic condition of the area. 3.30, the municipality in Kanda and surrounding areas has over a number of years experienced high political tension with political threats and warnings of political violence. 3.31, rural villages are usually soft targets for criminals, and the security assessment by the departments of police and defense and military veterans concluded that Kanda was the highest area. Page 15, reflects on the terrain on which the construction took place. 3.32, the land on which the president's private residence has been developed lies at a gradient of 40 to 70 degrees, which makes it even more susceptible to flood during storms. 3.33, due to this gradient, all construction activities such as earthwork and landscaping have included modifications, buttresses, and paving for proper water flow and stormwater drainage. 3.34, to ensure general security and the slow flow of traffic in case of emergencies, all structures that could have slowed down traffic or that could have been used as highways and strategic attack points by possible assailants had to be removed and cleared. 3.35, where structures and other residences had to be removed and cleared, they had to be re-erected elsewhere. All these are some observations out of the JSCI report and the Security Cluster report. It's observations that the committee is making. The prime expansion and improvements to the Zuma homestead is the other 3.36. In 2008, prior to being elected as president, the Zuma family started expanding and improving the homestead. 3.37. At the time of the president's inauguration in 2009, the three houses on which work had started were at various stages of construction. The first house was at roof level, with work on the roof at the first stage. The second house was also at roof level, just ready for the roof to be installed, and the third house was just below the roof level. Once again, we cross-reference that the internal skills for security cluster task in the report on page 8. 3.38. The Zuma family appointed its own architect, contractors, and engineers for project, and no space was reduced to improve the homestead. 3.9. In the Interministerial Security Cluster Tasking Report, the Department of Public Works made it clear that the department, and I quote, had not paid any contractor for the construction of the houses of the peasants. And that's on page 31 of that report. The introduction of Mr. Akanya, 3.40. The president introduced Mr. Nakanya to the GPWA. This was done because there were already advanced construction taking place at the president's homestead. The president notes that, and I quote, that a meeting was facilitated a meeting between the same group of persons and Mr. Nakanya, the consultant who was already engaged with building work at my home, so that there would be a place for the pre-existing place of construction at the residences, and that there would be as little disruption as possible to the work commissions. This is from the President's report to the Speaker on the 14th of August 2014, page 7, paragraph 31. Regarding allegation that the President's daughters may have benefited from the speech project, 3.41, the public project in paragraphs 10.5.1, page 4, that you will find no evidence that the President's daughters benefited from the speech project, and contractual arrangement that involves security upgrades at its private residence, Canada. 3.42. We easily observe that, despite the above finding in paragraph 93.2, 93.2 and 93.3 on page 408, the public contention continues to allege that there is no question that his family benefited from these, as they now form part of the President's estates, and I close quote. The question that arises is whether or not the family has and will continue to unduly benefit from the luxurious items not recommended in the security evaluation. In this respect, still under observations derived from the report, the committee holds a different view. Steps taken by the President to deal with the allegations of maladministration and wastage related to the project secure its private residence in Canada. 3.43. Following sustained media allegations of maladministration and wastage that the President used state funds to build his private residence in Canada, the President took a number of steps to deal with this matter. 3.44. These actions by the President as head of the National Executive took place in addition to the investigation by the Public Protector undertook and reported on its security conversation in March 2014. 3.45. Each of the investigations resulted in reports that included findings and remedial actions that cannot be ignored. 3.46. The investigations and reports can be recorded chronologically as follows. On 5 October 2012, the Minister of Public Works announced that an investigation into allegations of maladministration and wastage of public resources would take place by a session called the Inter-Ministerial Security Cluster Task Force. B. On 20 December 2013, the President signed Proclamation R-59 2013 for the Special Investigation Unit to investigate the matter and where relevant institute civil action to recover any state funds that might have been lost due to possible irregular activities. C. The Inter-Ministerial Security Cluster Task Force reports on its investigation on 27 January 2013. D. The President in his letter dated 2 April 2014 addressed the Speaker of the National Assembly noted the report of the Public Protector, its findings and recommendations. E. The president in this legislature, they requested the SIU to provide him with a provisional report of his investigation as soon as possible in order to assist him in providing the National Assembly with a final report. On 14 August 2014, the president provided a further report to the National Assembly on the efforts he and the government has collectively made in decision making to ensure that whatever state funds might have been lost due to the security outbreaks could be identified and recovered, and that the persons who were implicated to evidence were brought to court. With regards to whether the president has depended to benefit unduly as a result of the security outbreaks, the committee noted that 3.48, the security list developed by the South African Police Services and relied upon by the public protector in the report was not developed in accordance with Step 2 and 3 of Cabinet Memorandum of 2003. There was no evidence that it was conducted together with state security agency or that it was admitted to the Interdepartmental Security Coordinating Committee. And this information is derived out of paragraph 9.1.15 on page 89 of the Public Protection Report. The committee could thus not rely on the authenticity of this list. Commonalities across reports of non-compliance with relevant legislation that led to irregular actions and measures caused escalations. 3.49, there was agreement across investigators' reports of non-compliance with the legislative framework, supply chain management regulations, treasury regulations, as well as unnecessary cost escalation. 3.50, the report of the Inter-Ministerial Task Force, the Public Protector and the Special Investigator that indicated that costing escalations inflated the project costs in an irregular manner to an amount in excess of 260 million. 3.51. Having read and perused the investigative reports, there was agreement in the initial meetings of the committee between all political parties that the value of the existing structures and work that was performed had been costly inflated and not worth the amount that was spent in excess of 260 million. 3.52. The table that shows general agreement across the reports of the Inter-Ministerial Task Team, the Public Protector, and the Special Investigating List on the issues of non-compliance, unnecessary cost escalations, and irregular activities that took place in the project. And the Honourable Members will find that table on page 19. I want to stop there and ask if there is any specific issue that members want to raise at this point. Honourable Gemma?
Well, Chair, I think in 3.8, second line, I think it is just Step 2. I think 3 should be deleted. I think the Public Protector's report is able, but it puts the one of the steps behind, well, below 2 and 3, but in the original list of 10, those interpart of the Mental Security Coordinator and the SIU is Step 2. So I said, yes, I'm just so Step 3 must be deleted.
Yes, Honourable Member.
If I may take you back.
Yes.
To page 6.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. Where we had our different needs in the other opposition, in the opposition party. So the majority party, which said we were not any of the reports. And we also
the agreement on the inclusion of that item, that the view of the majority party was that the reports were not being reviewed, and also that a new inquiry is not being started by the committee. The agreement on that? Can you also capture that so that it can be then, the document can be amended accordingly? And that is on page 6. Now go back to where we were, on the Rebecca. Any other comments? Any other comments? No further comments, I will continue. evidence in the investigative reports or controls here to apply the professional team. 3.53. The report documents the process amounting to dereliction of duty with control over design, costing, and procurement of service providers ceded to the professional, the private professional team. This was a process in which the GPW's professional team systematically and irregularly ceded control of the budget. Just make that correction there. Irregularly ceded control of the budget and the procurement of service providers to the private professional team, namely Makanya Architects and RG Consultants. 3.54. DPW's cost control system that monitors place through the special bid adjudicating committee, the regional bid adjudicating committee, and the supply chain manager was corrupted once the acting director general, the deputy director general, key accounts manager, the regional manager of the Durban regional office, and project manager increased the, and the acronym there is being used, RBHC, not invented, that refers to the regional bid adjudicating committee, increased the regional bid adjudicating committee cost limitations of 500,000 rand to an unlimited amount. So only one useful fee as far as the point is concerned. I think the technical team must also be mindful that when you read the acronym, that you use it also consistently. 3.55, this meant that the Makanya and RNG Consultants Combination was able to procure service providers with access to state funds that had no limit set with through the normal cost control systems. 3.56. The investigative reports affirm that the point that you want to make. The investigative reports affirm that the Makanya RNG Consultants Combination continued to do the design and costing on behalf of the DPW's professional team. 3.57, the reports provide evidence that Mr. Makanya, the architect of the private renovations at the President's private residence in Canada, became the principal agent of the project. 3.58, the SIU report further points out that the appointment procedure of the principal agent, may you also just correct that, please? It's just an acronym. Isolated. Of the principal agent and the manner of procuring services by ceding control to the principal agent were evidently irregular and is cross-referenced across the face of the SIU report. 3.59, the SIU report further provided evidence that ceding of total control into the hands of the principal agent, once again, took place in combination with removal of control of DPW's supply chain management department. 3.60. The report stated that, in this capacity, Mr. Makanya acted on behalf of DPW and they would, in designing and procuring services on behalf of DPW, ensure prudent use of project funds. 3.61. The committee observed that as the principal agent, Mr. Makanya had a duty to provide regular reports to the DPW professional team on matters of the design, the procurement of services, and the costing of all parts of the project. And there we come to the records of the public protection report and the SIU report. 3.62, the committee observed that the reports refer to the DPW professional team expressing its concerns that the principal agent did not prepare and send monthly reports to the DPW professional team. 3.63, the reports unanimously refer to evidence collected from persons involved that the operationalization of the project by the Department of Public Works constituted non-compliance with the PFMA, the National Treasury Regulations, and the Department's own supply chain management policies. The SIU report goes as far as referring to the DPW project managers as blocking the supply chain management policy and going so far as to include making the rules as one way along the applicable legislation and policy. 3.62. The committee noted that the public protector's report stated that the authority, and I quote, to implement security measures at the private residence of the president is primarily conferred and cabinet policy of 2003, that appears on page 427 of the report. 3.65, however, before, because National Key Points Act 102 of 1980 was, and I quote, inexplicably dragged in halfway through the implementation of the current project close code, it was not even that its provisions had to be complied with, and appears on the public text report of page 427, paragraph 10.13. 3.66, the committee noted that the special investigating unit, SIU, expressed a view that the upgrades were not installed of the National Key Points Act, but in terms of cabinet memorandum of 2003. 3.67, the committee observed that the cabinet memorandum of 2003 was adopted by cabinet after the promulgation of the PFMA, and the steps contained in it are generally aligned to the provisions of the PFMA. 3.68, the committee observed that the cabinet memorandum of 2003 stated the following steps to be followed when security measures have been installed in the private residence of the president, former president, deputy president, and former deputy president. A request from the president followed by an evaluation by the South African Police Services based on threat analysis by the state security agency or structures that the state shall construct to secure the safety of the president and his immediate dependents, including their personal property. E. Formulation by SEPS and the SSA of a proposal on appropriate measures, staff and structures to be put in place by the state. These measures shall be submitted to the Interdepartmental Security Coordinating Committee, the ISCC, for technical assessment. C. The DPW prepares a cost estimate based on the proposed structural security measures and submits this to the South African Police Services. D. The South African Police Services then advises the Minister, and at the time the memorandum was compiled to the Minister of Safety Security, on the proposed security measures and the related costs. E. The Minister of Safety and Security approves and communicates such measures to the President for consent. F. South African Police Service submits measures as approved by the President to the DPW, which approaches the Minister of Public Works for approval of costs of the structural security measures. D. Structural security measures that were approved are then implemented as follows. 1. SEPS personnel and related costs are provided and funded by SEPS. Structural, 2. Structural additions and amendments to the property is made and thereafter maintained from the DPW budget. H. The security situation at the president's private property should from time to time be revisited by SEPS to ensure continued security measures, assessments and threat analysis. I. These assessment reports may from time to time necessitate up or downgrades or termination depending on the dynamic security requirements of the political principle. J. Where downgrades or termination takes place, any permanent structures become the property of the owner on which the said structures were erected, who shall then maintain them. And this is out of the Inter-Ministerial Security Cluster Task Report, page 28-29. 3.69. The committee observed that only two of the baskets, as set out in the Cabinet Memorandum of 2003, were implemented. And these are, two security assessments were done by SEPS, and we derive and come to that out of the report of the public protector of page 389. And, second step, the DPW cost estimate was done, and that is derived from the SIU report, page 214, paragraph 34. I'll pause there before I get into the findings. Are there any questions or clarity? This is not much different from the draft that was here last week, but there were proposals that were made by certain members as to the amendment to certain key provisions of observations. Are there any comments? Some findings. With regards to the legislation and regulation that guided security upgrade project, the committee finds the following. 4.1. The Cabinet Memorandum of 2003 is the appropriate policy document that should guide the process for securing the private residence of the President. 4.2. The National Key Points Act of 1980 was not the applicable piece of legislation that guided the security upgrades of the president's private residence at Canada. 4.3, neither the National Key Point Act nor the Cabinet Memorandum of 2003 requires the residence to declare a National Key Point before security upgrades can be effected. 4.4, seems as if there was a lack of oversight by the relevant executive authority, the relevant ministers, to ensure the proper departmental coordination and implementation in compliance with the Cabinet Memorandum of 2003. 4.5, from the source documents in front of us, it appears as if regular security assessments as stated in the Cabinet Memorandum of 2003 were not performed by the South African Police Services. 4.6, the SIU, using the security requirements as set out in the security assessment reports of the South African Police Services and the SANDF, issued a considered view of concern that required urgent attention. In the final 2 points of its report, paragraph 46 and 47, on page 247 and 248, it places urgency on the need for further security assessments by security experts from the State Security Agency, South African Police Services, and the SANDF. And I quote, during the inspection in Logan, the investigating team noted a number of matters of concern relating to the upgrades that had been effected. Having regard for what was produced under Makanya's stewardship of the project and measuring it against what the security assessment report set out as requirements, in our respectful view, a further review by SEPS should be undertaken as soon as possible. Close quote. Sub-end dealing with the following. With regards to the initiation of security upgrades at the private residence of the President, Deputy President, former President, and former Deputy President, the committee finds that 4.7, it is common cause that security upgrades have to be effected at the President's private residence in Canada. 4.8, the public protector on page 2427, paragraph 10.1.1, and the Special Investigation Unit, pages 68, 69, 189, both reported that the Cabinet Memorandum of 2003 is the authority for implementing security measures at the President's private residence. The public protector states as follows, and I quote, however, no evidence has been submitted or found indicating that the presidency requested the South African Police Services and State Security Service to consider securing the private residence of the president, yet this is the trigger mechanism stipulated in paragraph 8.12, paragraph B and I of the Cabinet Policy of 2003, close quote. That's on page 20, paragraph 9 of the public protector's report. In the light of the aforementioned comment by the public protector, it is clear that the President did not request upgrades. 4.9. The public protector further states that, and I quote, however, I was persuaded by the submission by various representatives of the state that the normal process is not to wait for a request from the President. I was advised that the action is taken to provide immediate basic security while commencing a process of conducting a comprehensive security evaluation as soon as the President is elected. Close quote. Page 20, paragraph 10 of the Public Protector's Report. The President, in his report to the Speaker, states that, and I quote, paragraph 25, in 2009, I was appointed as the President of the Republic. Immediately upon my operation, members of the security cluster engaged with the regarding security requirements by Homestead, which are commensurate with a head of state of the Republic. In view of the law, the committee finds that the project to secure the president's private residence was correctly initiated. 4.10. The president in his report to the Speaker of the National Assembly indicates as follows, and I quote, paragraph 13, in the course of the engagements with the security cluster, I initially met with the then Minister of Public Works, Mr. Jeff Dodge, senior SEPS officials, and other government officials at my own state in a consultative process regarding improved security due to my occupying the office of the President of the Republic. Close quote. The President further states, in paragraph 32, and I quote, from time to time I receive briefings, both formally and informally, from various ministers engaged with the security enhancements. I was advised that some street children need to clear the Muslim national security keyboard. While I do no exception to such declaration, I was not intimately involved with final details. This quote. Committee of Science said, while the President may not have questioned the security updates, from the above it is certain that he became aware of them. 4.11. It is, however, important to note that the reports contain no evidence that the President in any manner influenced the executive authorities or officials to act in ways that may suggest that they should have acted irregularly while securing his private residence at Canada. And the following heading deals with regards to the appointment of Mr. Makaya and the private professional team, the committee finds text 4.12, those officials responsible for Mr. Makaya's later appointment as principal agent knew the requirements of the legal, regulatory, and supply chain management framework, but did not follow these important prescripts to the letter, and therefore it can be alleged that they acted irregularly. 4.13, the private professional team was appointed in an irregular manner, and ceding by the GPW officials of their responsibilities to Makanya and RNG postal groups allowed for scope creep, and that's a term that the public protector also uses in their report, and massive irregularities that saw costs soar to in excess of 260 million rand, as highlighted by both the public protectors and the SIU reports. 4.14, there was gross negligence on the part of senior officials of the Department of Public Works. The officials who have acted outside the legal and regulatory financial framework exposed themselves to the consequences as described in the relevant legislation that gives effect to Section 216 of the Constitution, which is the Public Finance Management Act, National Treasury Practice Notes, and the DPW Supply Chain Management Policies. 4.15, it appears from the Public Protector's report that the former Minister and Deputy Minister of Public Works, and I quote, were at some stages involved in the implementation of the Nkansa project. The involvement, albeit for a short period of time, appears to have created an atmosphere that was perceived as political interference or pressure, although the evidence does not show any such intent on their part. Close quote, that is also on the Public Protection Report, page 45, paragraph 10.7.1.1. 4.16, the committee is also of a considered view and thus finds that the National Keyboards Act of 1980 was erroneously applied to deal with the security requirements of the President. 4.17, the oversight over the implementation of the 2003 Cabinet Memorandum is the responsibility of the relevant members of the executive authority. And another finding, systems of financial control are constitutionally prescribed. 4.18, the measure of financial control was flouted, and transparency and control was not evident in the manner in which the project was implemented. Another finding deals with the following. With regard to efforts of the President to investigate allegations of maladministration and wastage in the prestige project involving security upgrades of the private residents in Canada, the committee finds that 4.19, the public protector alleges that the President failed to act to protect state resources and that this failure constituted a violation of paragraph 2 of the executive tax code. That's on the public protector's report, page 439, paragraph 10.10.1, page 6. 4.20, the information before the committee shows that the President as head of state instituted the following actions. On 5 October 2012, the Minister of Public Works announced that an investigation into the allegations could take place by a specially convened security task force. This task team would, in all likelihood, have been appointed after consultation with the President. It is inconceivable that the task team would have been appointed without the President being aware of his appointment. On 20 December 2013, the President signed proclamation R359 of 2013 for the special investigating unit to investigate the matter and where relevant institute civil action to recover any state funds that might have been lost due to possible irregular activities. secured the Dutch task team reported on its investigation on 27 January 2013. Next bullet. Once the public protective support security company was made public on 19 March 2014 and was admitted to the National Assembly by the President. The President, adhering to Chapter 9 of the Constitution, noted the report's findings and recommendations and responded to it as a letter to the Speaker of the National Assembly on the 7th of April 2014. This is contained in the announcement tables and committee reports document page 2418. The President in this letter stated that he requested the SIU to make a provisional report of the investigation available so that he could respond more fully to the report of the public protector. On 14 August 2014, the President reported to the National Assembly on the efforts he and government as a collective is making to ensure whatever said funds might have been lost due to security upgrades to be identified and recovered, and the persons who were implicated through evidence were brought to book. 4.1. In light of the above points, the suggestion that the President did not act is not correct. With regards to whether the President and his dependents benefited unduly as a result of the security outrage, the committee found that 4.22. The committee finds that the security list developed by SAPS and relied upon by the public to obtain a report was not developed in accordance with Step 2 of the Cabinet Memorandum of 2003. The Step 2 of the Cabinet Memorandum of 2003 requires a formulation by the South African Police Service and the State Security Agency of a proposal on appropriate security measures to be put in place by the State at the President's private residence. These measures must thereafter be communicated to the Interdepartmental Security Coordinating Committee, the ISCC, for technical assessment. 4.23. In view of the fact that a list compiled by the SAPS was not developed in accordance with the Cabinet Memorandum of 2003, the committee could thus not rely on this list. 4.24. It is common cause that the public protector is not a security expert. The Cabinet Memorandum of 2003 outlines 10 steps to be followed when security measures are to be installed at the private residences of a certain president, deputy president, former presidents, and deputy presidents. All the reports prepared on the security upgrades at the President's private residence are unanimous that most of the aforementioned steps was not complied with. 4.25. A senior parliamentary legal advisor provided a legal opinion to the committee on undue enrichment and arrived at the following conclusion, and I quote, therefore, in my view, it would be premature for the committee to make a finding of undue enrichment. Prior to the matter had been attended to by relevant security experts consistently with the Cabinet Memorandum of 2003. The committee concurs with this legal advice. With regards to the ownership of land, including the structures and amenities that were constructed on it, the committee found that 4.26. The President's report to Speaker of the National Assembly provides clarity on the issue of ownership and occupation of land in question. Paragraph 11 of the President's report features follows, and I quote, my family homestead is located some 24 kilometers south of the Tanda Town Center. Land on which it is situated is owned by Mwanyama Trust, the legal entity that owns the additional land and is administered by its members, including Google, Verity, and Carpet, Zulu. Together with my family, I occupy the land for specific issues by the local courts in terms of permission to occupy. Close quote. 4.27. It is evident from the source documents before the committee that both pieces of land with security upgrades to place belong to the Mwanyama Trust and that the Zuma family occupies one of the pieces of land. With regard to the question of whether the President was in violation of the executive member's code, the committee found the following. 4.28. There were several allegations about the President, among others that, in the first bullet point, the President lied to Parliament when he said the government did not build his house, the government built his father's shop for Mr. Zuma, and that the family benefited from the project, especially the President's brother. The public protector cleared the President in all these serious allegations, paragraph 10.5.1, page 431 of the report, except that she found that they were, according to her, non, and I quote, non-security related items that were reacted upon which the president and his family materially desperately felt. That public protection report page 41 paragraphs 10.5.1 and sorry should be page 41 paragraph 10.5.1 and page 432 paragraph 10.5.4. 4.29. In the judgment of the Democratic Alliance versus the South African Broadcasting Commission Limited and others, case number 12497-2014, the Western Cape High Court, Judge Lucas referred to the nature and the extent of the powers of the public protector as stated as follows. Paragraph 1 of their judgment, I quote, further, unlike an order or decision of the court, a finding by the public protector is not binding on persons and organs of state. If it was intended that the findings of the public protector should be binding and enforceable, the Constitution would have said so. 4.30. Regarding the above, the committee thus finds that the Constitution, section 167, subsection 4, paragraph E, specifies that only the Constitutional Court may decide that Parliament or the President has failed to fulfill the constitutional obligation. Recommendations. With regards to non-compliance with relevant legislation, policy instruments and regulations that led to irregular actions and massive cost escalations, the committee recommends the following. Yes. Page 27, the second bit, these are the special investigation unit, special investigation unit, just for consistency of the courts. Yes, Honourable Member.
Before we move to the conditions, Fishman, paragraph under 4.28, the first sentence was a federal decision about the president of the court. About that, about the sentence, she said against the president's life.
What's your proposal?
The proposal is that the president that you want to do. The second paragraph is 4.28 on the public protector is the president in all the federal allegations, paragraph 10.5.1. I think they should pull the extra to the intellectual conclusion because I think they should flash part of the conclusion. It's largely the PP. Stating that the president did not violate the code of conduct, a fixed on the code of conduct. So it should be relevant to that paragraph. Then I move, I'll take it for question because I just wanted to show that then we have.
Before we move away from the agreement from the committee members that we should effect, what we are saying is, honorable by that the code is incomplete, is that correct?
Yeah, because it doesn't summarize the amendment.
The agreement on that? Yes.
Basically, just a type of error that is to on paragraph 4.1.4, the state can go to the that we should be corrected. Check mark in on page 25, 4.1.2, the proof file, it has been no error, which is can be put. Paragraph of page 23. After paragraph
4.5. What page are you on, Mr. Ezra?
23. Paragraph 4.5.
Yes.
From the short document, it appears, and I think, not only from the magistrate location, but it appears as if, I thought it would be, it appears that the regular security assessment. It appears that the regular security assessment has entered in the committee of 2003 were not performed to the South African Commission.
Can we check on that one?
And then you go to under, I think it should be excluded. One paragraph there, under 4.3, 4.3 is never the additional 2.8, nor the committee under of 2003 requires the residents to be declared an additional 2.8 before the future risk can be affected. And I think you should include a sentence that says that the
know that. Anything else? We proceed. Then on to the recommendations. In regards to non-compliance with relevant legislation, policy instruments and regulations that led to trigger actions and mental health escalation, the committee recommends that the president must ensure the implementation of all measures as outlined in his final report on the outrage that is in current private residence to speak of the national safety, according to August 2014. However, the committee is of considered view that the security upgrade must be effected in terms of the provisions of the Cabinet Memorandum of 2003. 5.2, the President should consider whether any members of the executive authority failed to implement the provisions of the Cabinet Memorandum of 2003, either from complacency or negligence in the execution of their duties and, if necessary, take appropriate action. 5.3, the President should note the instances where the executive authorities did not act according to the prescripts of the PFA that sets out precise divisions of responsibility between the executive authority and the administration, and if necessary, take the appropriate action. 5.4, the Cabinet must strengthen efforts to ensure greater coordination of various strategic projects pertaining to the security of the President, Deputy President, former Presidents, and former Deputy Presidents. 5.5. All persons responsible for the loss of state funds should be held accountable, and the law should take its course. The committee fully supports the measures that are implemented by the Special Investigation Unit and relevant authorities. 5.6. The Department of Public Works should strengthen its supply chain management processes and key accounts management branches, and include as part of this process precisely set time frames and cost limits for each project. With regards to the structures and amenities that were constructed on the land adjacent to the Zuma homestead that belongs to Ngonyama Trust, the committee recommends that 5.7, the relevant executive authority should discuss at the appropriate time the post-tenure arrangements with the relevant local, provincial and national authorities to facilitate the future use of such structures and amenities by the local communities. 5.8, the Department of Public Works should ensure that the necessary consultation take place with the State Security Department so that proper security assessments regularly take place to ensure ongoing security of President, Deputy President, former Presidents and former Deputy Presidents and their dependents after they leave office. With regards to whether the President and his dependents benefited duly as a result of the security upgrade, the committee found that 5.9, the committee recommends that the matter of what constitutes security and non-security upgrades at the President's private residence be referred back to Cabinet for determination by the relevant security experts in line with the Cabinet Memorandum of 2003. Cabinet must report back to the National Assembly on the steps taken to give effect to the recommendation. With regards to the legislation and regulation that guided the security upgrade project, the committee recommends that 5.10, policy and regulatory gaps in the current legislative and regulatory framework relating to securing the private residences of political office bearers requires urgent attention to avoid further possible risks of resources. 5.11, a comprehensive review of the National Key Points Act, Act 102 of 1980 should be undertaken to ensure that the new piece of legislation that is relevant to the current constitutional and legislative dispensation is promulgated. 5.12, the Cabinet Memorandum of 2003 and related regulations such as the Ministerial Handbook must be reviewed by Cabinet. 5.13, a technical team of qualified security experts from the State Security Agency and the South African Police Services should undertake an evaluation of the existing security features at the private residence of the President at Nkandla to assess whether the implemented security features are secure and to evaluate the concerns raised by the SIU report. The outcome of this evaluation should be reported back to Cabinet. 5.14, all contractors involved in the projects that are focused on security upgrades of senior public office bearers should in future be properly vetted by the relevant security agencies and to comply with the construction industry building standards set out in the policies and regulations of the Department of Public Works. 5.15, the relevant executive authorities, after doing the necessary assessment of security experts should, in future, report Kevin and Ireland on the implementation of security upgrades of these projects. Regular reports as per the relevant legislation should be made to the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence of Ireland. 5.16, a private home of the President and the Deputy President that is used for official government or paper accommodation should qualify for the necessary security installations and security improvements. I have comments. Honorable Akuda.
I think from page 31, paragraph 5.9, we need to include a time frame.
Page 31, 5.9.
Yes, we need a time frame there. That's a special report to Parliament to implement.
That is the recommendation that deals with the determination of security and non-security issues. Honorable Kubai.
To 5.2,
The president should consider whether any members of the committee for policy should implement the position of the candidate memorandum of 2003, either through completion or negligence in the implementation execution of their duty and if necessary to take appropriate action. I'm just wondering, should we list as the discussions that we have been previously in the committee?
Security Act, that's one you can put a time frame on. Very much.
exactly what the issue is and where those very contentious issues arise out of this outrage. And one of those contentious issues around spiritual security and non-security. Now surely you can't just leave it open. I think you would agree with that one of the topics. There must be a time where so that also the legislature knows exactly by when and they should put the impetus on those that are supposed to do what to do it and to report back to Parliament. Otherwise, it may take 2 years, may take 3 years, and then. So, in respect of that, what needs to be done, there needs to be a time frame. And if the time frame can be met or is unrealistic because we ourselves are also not security experts, then surely the cabinet will communicate it to the speaker if it is not realistic. But there must be the sufficient pressure put on the people are supposed to perform this task either way that they were supposed to perform anyway. So it's not a new assignment they are given to them. They were supposed to do it. It wasn't done. So we are simply saying now it must be done within 3 months. It's not a new assignment. As far as the another issue around all the executive authority 5.3 and the linkage with the PSMA, there's only in our own findings on what is the key in front of us in the reports. There's just mention made by the public protector, specifically of the former Minister of Public Works and the Deputy Minister of Public Works, who possibly could have entered into the area beyond the prescripts of the PFMA. So that can be said, the former Minister of Public Works and the former Deputy Minister of Public Works. That is very, very clear. I think 5.2 Honourable Guy is worded sufficiently, if you read it in line with the findings that have been made, to say that the President should consider whether any members of the executive authority, because they report to the President, failed to implement the procedures of the Cabinet and Director of 2003, for whatever reason, and if necessary, take appropriate action. Earlier in the report, there is reference where the President refers that there were on occasions some of them who came formally or informally. We, because of the decision that the committee took, that we are not reviewing reports and that we are not interrogating people who are named in the reports, are not in a position to say that it's exactly this cabinet minister or that cabinet minister who did not do X, Y, Z. The obligation is on the President to make the determination and take the appropriate action, if necessary. I think that will address the concerns that we must have raised on what's happened.
Chairperson, I want to clear a few issues. Because we were not investigating into whether or not any particular minister committed or omitted to do anything. The reference to the other minister, Deutsch, and the deputy, is contained in the report. So it's not something that we went to investigate. So the naming of the people, those two, cannot suggest that we had to go and find out other names. So I want to agree with you that the way this is phrased, I think it is the correct way, and we should let it be.
Mr. Chairperson, I just want to move for the adoption of the report with this amendment.
Just before you do that, are there any other issues that members want to clarify in terms of this report? Of course, there's been a proposal that includes a time frame of 3 months for the assessment to be done of security and non-security and for it to be reported back to Parliament. So that will be included there, as well as the additional assessment that must be done. And I want to clarify also the way that this word 5.13, because there is a potential that it can be misunderstood. It says a technical team of qualified security experts from the State Security Agency and South African Police Services is undertaking evaluation of the existing security features at the private residence of the President at Uganda to assess whether the implemented security features are secure and to evaluate the concerns raised by the SIU report. The outcome of this evaluation must be reported to the Cabinet and to Parliament. Now, the reason, and there was quite a bit of discussion that we had with the legal advisors and also with the technical team that assisted us. Any president must not be created that the committee saying to this team, go and spend more money on a project. That is not what we're saying. What we are saying is that they must go, they must evaluate the concerns of the SIU and report it back to cabinet and to parliament. So that is not a green light for some processes to continue the way that it has been done. I hope that is clear.
My chairperson, you are right, because those who have to do this in the normal course of the duty. So it can justify the creation of the federal aspect. It has to be the normal course of the duty.
Is there any other point? The Honourable Zappu has moved for the adoption of the report as amended. Is there a seconder? Excuse me, nobody is supporting you. It's seconded by the Honourable Riyad Mahmoud. The report then, as was tabled in front of this committee, as amended, is thus adopted by the committee. The technical team must ensure that immediately the necessary changes are effected so that the report reaches the National Assembly table as soon as possible so that it can appear in the APC. Is there any other matter on the news? Honourable Riyad Mahmoud. The report that is in front of us clearly states that it's a draft report. There were certain amendments that were made. They will go and make those necessary changes now. It will be submitted, but you are aware I read word for word for this report as it is appearing here. So anyone who writes will have to take into account what the amendments are as well, because the final report will appear, as you correctly state, in the ATC. When it is published. Okay. So this report is, it had the status of a draft report, but with the amendments that has been effected, it is a final report of the committee. Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Members. That concludes the business of this committee. Thank you for your participation over the last few weeks. And please take time tomorrow to also read the final report or send you later as many amendments have been affected in the film. It won't be about half an hour or so to send the final report. Thank you.